1983, here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My name is Jean Pyatt. I am the national chairman of the Oral History Committee for the Women's Overseas Service League. Tonight, I'm interviewing Mary C. Burnham in her apartment overlooking Lake Michigan. Mary was a dietitian in the Army Medical Specialist Corps in World War II. She is also national past president and presently president of the Milwaukee unit. Since coming into WOSL in 1961, Mary has been president of the unit three times, was area director for 7 years, was national vice president, and finally national president for 2 years.
I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in 1907. Downer Seminary and 2 years at Milwaukee Downer College. I then transferred to the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where I obtained a Bachelor of Science in Home Economics degree. This was followed by a 9-month dietetic internship at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland. After which I came back to Chicago, where I was dietitian at the Illinois Central Hospital in Chicago, Illinois for the next 12 years. This was during the Depression, of course, and I was lucky to have an assignment where I could get transportation on the trains and a room and a reasonably adequate salary.
Where did you live, Mary, when you were?
In the hospital.
In the hospital?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of money did you make there?
I think it was $125 a month, but I had my room in the hospital and meals, all meals.
And what year would that have been?
Well, that was 1931 until 1942, mm-hmm. Actually 11 years. At that time, that was after Pearl Harbor, of course. And at that time, there was a good deal of talk about dietitians being taken into the military. And I guess I was getting sick of Chicago. and of my job there, and was anxious to get going. So I applied for the military. In 10 days, I received a telegram to report to Camp Hewlin, Palacios, Texas.
I've never even heard of that place.
You never heard of it. Neither had the people at the Illinois Central Railroad when I went to check on a ticket. after a short vacation, I reported to Fort Camp Hewlin, which had been a National Guard training camp right on the Gulf of Mexico. It was now an anti-aircraft training center. We had planes flying up and spotting targets here and there in the sky, and was quite fairly interesting for our first assignment. There were two other dietitians, but we did a little drilling here and there.
You did learn some of the military etiquette then.
Yes. They had an awful hard time trying to decide what uniforms we should wear. Perhaps I should say that for the first few months we were there, I was there, that we were not considered military, we were civilian. But in March of 1943, we were taken in to the military, sworn into the military, and then what kind of uniforms should we wear? The men never knew whether to salute us, and we never knew whether to salute back. but
what did they come up with?
Well, we finally had the same uniforms that the nurses were wearing. And I was there at Camp Hewlin for about a year when I had orders to head for overseas. After a vacation at home, I went by train in my new uniform, fairly new uniform, to Camp Stoneman, California, near San Francisco. Here we spent almost a month, I think, training, climbing up the rope.
Really?
Up and down the rope ladder, oh. Yeah. Which we might have to do on
boarding
or in an emergency. And we were supposed to not tell anybody where we were.
You were going to be in enemy waters too, weren't you?
Yeah.
The possibility of...
Yes, indeed.
Torpedoes.
So finally the day came when we were to set out. We were told not to tell anyone when we were leaving or what we were going to do. But by golly, they had us parade from Camp Stoneman down to the ship, right through town. we got on to the, what was the name of the ship? It was an old President liner that had been taken out of mothballs, and we got on that at Fort Mason in San Francisco and headed out under the Golden Gate Bridge. We were not told where we were going. We had no idea. We did not see a sign of land for 21 days. We finally were told that we had crossed the equator, but they didn't say when or just where. we got a little farther along and were told that we had, or the rumor went around that we had to detour some miles to the south because a ship had been torpedoed ahead of us, which we found out later on was true. Finally, after 21 days, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we landed, we came into the harbor of Espiritu Santo in the New Hebrides Islands. It was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, just before the submarine net was closed for the day. We spent that night on the ship. There was an aircraft carrier nearby that was showing movies on the deck. We kind of watched that for a little. Incidentally, I might say that all the way over, we had not been allowed to have any light on deck at night on the ship. no cigarettes. And in those days, a few of us were occasionally smoking a cigarette.
I think a lot of us were smoking when we were in service.
Right. Anyway, the next day we landed and were assigned. I might say, by the way, that we were a group of transient dietitians and physiotherapists. And when we got to Santo, we were assigned to various posts on Santo, New Caledonia, New Zealand, and I guess that was about all. But I remained on Espiritu Santo with the 25th of ACT Hospital. We were, the hospital was in the middle of a coconut grove. it was a series of barracks. There were about 14 or 16 of us in a barrack, something like that. I was the only dietitian. They hadn't had a dietitian before. They had the food service running pretty well. Of course, we were getting military quartermaster foods primarily. Our equipment was rather not too modern, shall we say. We had a field range for the main cooking, one field range. We had a two-burner gasoline plate for special diet items that had to be cooked.
How many were you serving?
We had about almost 1,000 patients. So there was a bakery on the island. There was another army hospital, a station hospital. We were in a VAC hospital, but operating more or less like a general hospital because of the difficulty of transferring patients. We got some food from Australia, particularly lamb, and somehow or other, most of the men didn't care much for lamb. We got a whole shipload one time, that is the island did, the quartermaster, and they didn't have the freezer space to hold it, so they double issued it. And so we had lamb. I had one officer who swore that he wouldn't touch lamb. He could tell it when it was anywhere around, and he wouldn't eat it. One day we ground it up, added chopped bacon, onions, and some seasoning, and served it as hamburgers. And that officer came back and wanted some of that hamburger meat for a picnic. I didn't tell him. I don't remember. I think we gave him some of the meat. Anyway, another day we lost a patient. We couldn't find him anyplace. The nurses couldn't find him anyplace. Finally, he was discovered up in a coconut palm with a coconut in his hands, drinking green coconut milk. He was a Samoan scout who had been assigned to our forces, and he had an ulcer and should not have been drinking green coconut milk.
Does that have kind of an alcoholic effect?
Well, it just isn't, it's not bland enough, really, for an ulcer. cancer patient. Actually, he was used to drinking it, so it probably didn't hurt him, but the staff didn't think it was a very good idea. We had Bob Hope came to visit us one time, and that was interesting. We took picket boat rides around on off duty hours to the other islands in the group. We the 14th of July, which was what's the French holiday?
Pastille Day.
We went to a party given by some of the French planters on the island.
This area was French then.
It was a French and British condominium.
I see.
A double government, but there were a number of French people, and we joined a number of French Navy men who were in port at the time for the holiday, and had a very nice evening. Let's see now, what
did
else?
Did any of the big military wigs ever come there?
No, I don't remember ever seeing any of them there. We had, one thing, at the time that the landing was made in Normandy, one of the officers, we happened to be having dinner at the transportation officer's mess, and one of the men had a radio, and he got the report on the radio that they had made a landing on Normandy Beach. We happened to have joining us at dinner that night there a Frenchman who was a surveyor from New Caledonia, who was up on the island doing some work up there. He came with us, and we went back and listened to the report, which of course didn't say anything except they had made a landing. And I've never seen anyone so emotionally taut as he was. He stood there with his hands, fists clasped, and just hoping to hear something more than just that the landing had been made. But, well, I think that's about all about Espiritu Santo.
Where did you go from there? And how long were you in Espiritu?
One other thing I might mention that was kind of, one day I had a call from a young man who was a naval officer. His aunt was a very good friend of my mother's. And he was in dock, and he asked me to dinner. So we went out for dinner. He had a Jeep and had a nice visit. And pretty soon we headed back to the post, to the camp. And here was a shore patrol waiting at the gate. He had just appropriated the Jeep. He had been late getting started because they had had orders to sail that night or that early morning. And so he had had a late start, and so he had just taken the Jeep. As far as I know, that was the end of it. He didn't. He was returned to the ship, and the Jeep was returned. That was it. One Saturday, I received orders that I was to leave on Monday for Guadalcanal for transportation to Fiji to join a unit going to India. I hurried out and packed. The head nurse was a little unhappy with me. She thought I had asked for a transfer, which I hadn't. But anyway, I was all ready to leave on Monday and was no sooner airborne than they got a change of orders. Instead of going to Guadalcanal, I was supposed to go the opposite direction to New Caledonia. Unfortunately, I was already airborne. I spent 4 days up in Guadalcanal, just sort of looking around.
What was the state of the war in Guadalcanal at that point?
Well, it had pretty well gone on beyond Guadalcanal. While I was there, a group of ships came in, all different kinds of military ships. It was quite an imposing sight. Actually, I didn't get to see a great deal of the island, but anyway, in 3 or 4 days, we boarded a plane, flew right back over Espiritu Santo, right down to New Caledonia. We spent 2 weeks there and finally boarded a Liberty ship to go to Fiji. We had, they had never carried women on their ship before, and my deck crew was really spruced up, so they said, and they were delighted because they said the food was better.
this was another mixture of specialists?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was the same, although there were, let's see, I think there may have been some nurses in this group too, as well as the dietitians, some dietitians and physiotherapists. But on that Liberty ship, the water was pretty rough in spots, and some of the gals didn't feel too well. I sat with two nurses in the mess hall, and lo and behold, they were both from Milwaukee.
Did they know each other?
Oh yes, they knew each other very well. I hadn't known either of them, but they were very close friends. One of them now lives in Sun City, Arizona, and is a member of the Phoenix unit of WOSL. The other one has since passed away. But anyway, we arrived in Fiji and joined a unit. As a matter of fact, there were two units going around to India, one of which ended up in Calcutta. That was mine. The other one ended up in Assam, up in the wilder part of, or less settled part of India. Our flight around, I mean our ship, we didn't fly that time, we went by troop ship. A real honest-to-goodness troop ship carrying 6,000 men and 250 or something officers, something like that. We went around south of Australia, stopped for 2 days in the harbor of Melbourne. We're not allowed off the ship because there was another troop ship there too, and that was too many people to let loose in Melbourne. So they did take us on a bus trip around town, and other than that, we didn't see much in Melbourne. We went on and around Australia. As we got west of Australia, there were reports that a ship had been there were explosions in the water, as if bombs had been let loose or something. Anyway, it was a little scary for a few minutes, but nothing happened. We went on up to Bombay, where we spent a couple of days, and went by hospital train, British hospital train, across India to Calcutta. Here we were met by the commanding general and the army band and the big to-do in the Howrah station at Calcutta. Our hospital there was in a nice, very nice part of town near the Dockeria Lakes. We had about 1,000 patients there too. We were supporting the engineers building the Lido Road, and the Air Force flying the hump into China.
CBI. China, Burma, India.
It was, yeah. And we had about 1,000 patients there too.
Oh, no, you didn't.
And here we had much better equipment. We had a big stove roasting I can't remember whether it's wood burning or coal, but I think it was a wood burning stove. Anyway, we had a big stove. We had here we had Indians working with us, whereas in the islands all our staff were GIs. We had, and to see those Indians bend over double with a broom about a yard long trying to sweep a floor, you wonder how they had any back left. We had to, our food had to be delivered by truck to the wards. Some of the wards, however, weren't on a road, so the Indians would put the food on their heads and carry it over. And that was no mean trick, because the food was in a large, heavy metal-lined wooden box, which would hold five or six heavy metal containers, plus a lot of garam pani, which was hot water to keep them hot, keep the food hot. And they'd take off with this on their heads to carry it to the ward for the patients.
Heavens, that must have been weighing 200 pounds.
Oh, at least, I would think.
What kind of unit was that was there?
It was a general hospital. What's from, let's see, the two hospitals that went over, one was a University of Maryland hospital, the one that went up to Assam, and where was our hospital from? I can't remember. Anyway, there were two general hospitals. We had We did use some Indian food in this place. We had potatoes, which were about the size of an egg. And generally speaking, we had difficulty getting them peeled. Usually we ended up serving potatoes in the jackets.
Better for them anyhow.
Sure. But one thing that we missed there was milk.
You had no fresh milk there?
No.
Did you have canned milk?
Finally, I guess they did get some facilities to handle milk so that we did get some.
But they don't milk cows, do they, over in India?
No, I don't think they do.
So this had to be brought in from someplace?
Well, this was, I really am not sure. I know we didn't have much. We had mostly canned milk. Let's see.
Did you miss
any? There were some other things.
Miss any of our fruits or vegetables or anything like that over there?
Oh, yeah. We didn't have much in the way of fruits and vegetables. Let's see here. I had a 2-week vacation in Darjeeling, R&R, as they say in the Army.
Rest and recuperation.
Rest and recuperation, right. And by golly, it happened to come just at the time of VE Day.
VE Day.
There were, of course, many British in Darjeeling at the time, and they were very excited. We had, we celebrated with them, although we knew that we were still involved and weren't going to get off easy right then. But we had a nice gay evening, ending with singing in somebody's room someplace, I'm not sure where. But we did enjoy Darjeeling while we were up there. It is about 8,000 feet above sea level in the mountains. We took an excursion to Tiger Hill nearby, from which we could see Mount Everest. And visited the tea plantations. You all know Darjeeling tea. And we really enjoyed the trip, the 2 weeks. Let's see.
Then did you go back to Calcutta?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We had a Christmas concert by, is it Stokowski that Lily Pons was touring with? I think so. They came and gave a concert on the Maidan, which is a big open park in Calcutta. And then they came and joined us in the Officers Club for a reception that afternoon, which was very pleasant. Everybody who'd gotten Christmas cookies brought them over.
And were you responsible for that reception as a dietitian?
No.
No.
No. I don't remember who was, actually. And I think it just sort of was normal officers' club service, and plus whatever cookies people brought and that sort of thing. Incidentally, we got there in October, and of course, by the time people knew what APO to send packages to, a lot of people didn't get Christmas packages until almost Easter. But so, and by then it was almost time for VJ Day, and we headed for home. I flew from Calcutta to Karachi, then waited a while, supposedly for a ship. No ship appeared, so I was routed on another plane by way of Abadan, Iran, Cairo, and Casablanca, where we changed planes, and were there about 2 days, and on another plane headed for back for the States, landing in Miami, finishing our round-the-world trip from San Francisco.
About 2 years. 2 years.
Not quite 2 years. I got to Miami just before Thanksgiving and tried to call home. The long distance call had to go through Chicago, and the Chicago people were on strike.
Oh, no.
So, but that finished that tour.
Right, then where?
Well, if you want to go every place, I was sorry, you're not going to get away this evening.
Well, how long were you in the States before you were ordered overseas again?
Well, I was in the States from 1946 until 1950.
4 years. You had how many?
I was assigned first to Percy Jones General Hospital in
Battle Creek,
and then to San Antonio, Brook Army Hospital in San Antonio. I came home. My father was very ill, and I came home in November, I think it was, October or November of 1950, and he died while I was here, and before I had a chance to get back down to San Antonio, I had a message that could I go to Japan, or did I have to be here to settle the estate or anything like that. And I did not. My brother was here and could take care of anything. So by Christmas time that year, I was on my way to Japan.
Where in Japan?
Well, we landed, we went by ship this time too. We went to Yokohama briefly, then around still on the ship to Kobe, where we took a train to a former Japanese Army base. Near Osaka, Japan. It had been closed and was just being opened up as a hospital in support of the Korean War. we had to decide where we'd put this mess hall, where we'd put that one, and so on. But first, before we had anything to do with that, we arrived there late one afternoon to find an enlisted mess tent on fire, fire engines there, smoke coming out of the dining room, the kitchen, I mean. And they were supposed to be fixing dinner for us. Well, we finally got something to eat. It wasn't a critical situation, but it was kind of a startling thing to see smoke when we as we arrived there.
See any sign of the war in India at all?
Not very much, no. They weren't too involved with it, of course.
Did you get Korean patients in?
Yes. No, well, we got our patients from Korea, mm-hmm. Yes. However, I stayed there a year or two, and then was transferred up, about a little over a year, to Yokohama to a station hospital up there. And that there, of course, we saw even less of it.
Yeah.
One time, that was after we were up north, I think, in Yokohama. We went on a picnic down along the Hooghly River. And, oh, wait a minute, I'm jumping ahead. No, that's Japan, that's right. I'm getting a little confused. I've been talking too much.
No, you're a little traveler at this point.
Anyway, we went on a, that was in India, that was before, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. That was a picnic we had in India, and we went down along the Hooghly River and found a nice secluded spot with a lot of trees and a pleasant place to sit, and decided to have our picnic. Pretty soon there were Indians standing up on the sort of a bank near us, just standing there watching us. And before we were through, I think there must have been 15 or 18 Indians, all ages, up there just watching us to see what we were doing.
Probably never seen a picnic before.
Probably never had. And probably we were far enough actually from this area that they probably hadn't even seen any Americans around there.
Yeah.
Anyway, we gave them what food we had left and went back. Well, to get back to Japan, what did we do in Japan that was of interest?
What kind of a hospital was it there? This is in Osaka?
Well, Osaka was supporting the
Korean
War. In Yokohama, we were a station hospital. We were in a building that had been a store. Department store.
You're all right.
We had little two-bedroom sort of cottages with a living room and a giant bath right next to the officers' club that we lived in, which were very comfortable. We took several trips. In fact, on one trip, another dietitian who was stationed there and I went to Hong Kong, connected, then on to Bangkok, connected with what they called an embassy flight, which was a government flight, going to Abadan, Iran, and we took it for free to Delhi. And
a military.
That's a military plane, yeah. Well, a government plane. It was run by the military. And spent a day sightseeing in Delhi, which I hadn't
this
seen while I was there.
Again.
Well, this is just, yes, this yeah. is just a trip, though. And we had one day in Delhi, and then we went the next day, went down to Agra to see the Taj Mahal, and spent an interesting day down there. Then back to the airport to catch the same plane returning from Abadan and taking us back to Bangkok and then back to Hong Kong and back to Japan. Another later that year with one of the Red Cross girls whom I knew, who also, by the way, is now a member of WOSL.
What unit would that be?
She is in San Antonio, Mildred Mensch. And she and I went to Hong Kong, but we decided we were going to Macau from Hong Kong, do a little gambling. So we went down there for a day or two, and then back by ship. You're getting sleepy.
I sure am. There was a question I wanted to ask you a minute ago about the Taj Mahal, when you were talking about having seen the Taj Mahal.
Mm-hmm.
Was it as lovely as you had anticipated?
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
All right, now, go on.
And, well, let's see. Those were the main trips, actually, that we took. I had planned a trip to I was there in Japan for 3 years. In the 3 years that we were there, we managed to see quite a bit of Japan. We visited Mikimoto's pearl farm and watched the girls separating the pearls. And we also visited Hiroshima, where the atom bomb had fallen. And we're quite relieved to see that at least the people that we saw did not seem to feel too much feeling against us. We visited Nikko was next on our list with the big Buddha, which had originally been covered with a building which had been washed away by a tidal wave, and the Buddha stood there now out in the open. I don't know just how to give any idea of the height, but it was a tremendous figure, very imposing. We visited, what's the name of the place up north?
Was this another city?
Yeah, it was actually place where there are, were a number of temples. Oh, gosh. Well, what's the name of it? Anyway, it was a fascinating place to see. Among other things, there were the original figures of hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil.
The three little monkeys.
The three little monkeys, right. Plus a number of other of temples. This was quite a sacred place to the Japanese. Let's see. We did manage, actually, to see a great deal of Japan. We enjoyed it. But we were, I at least, was glad to be going home after 3 years.
Mary, how did you like the Japanese people?
Very much. I liked them very much. I had two Japanese secretaries. We had Japanese men working with us also. And we also had contact with other Japanese people occasionally. One thing that was rather interesting and made you feel a little bit strange was that the Women's Club of Yokohama, the women from the Women's Club of Yokohama, used to go through some of the trash cans and they'd pick out reasonably possible items of food that could be used by the orphans in the orphanage. Things like a carton of milk that was partly full, whole potatoes or whole items of food mostly.
Did it come
from the serving line or even probably from the trays too. Then shortly before I came home, the mess sergeant and I were invited to some kind of a meeting where we were thanked very profusely for the food that they had received.
They didn't seem to feel any antagonism.
They didn't seem to, the ones we hadn't came in contact with. I think MacArthur probably was a great deal, to a great degree, responsible for that. Maybe I'm over stressing it, but he did work a lot for the Japanese, and they quite revered him.
I heard one time that the Japanese had been told that we were going to be cruel to them when we took over the country.
That is true. Especially the children and, well, other people too, were looking for our soldiers to come in and beat them and, as you say, be cruel to them. And of course, our soldiers, as a general thing, did not do that sort of thing. They had candy and gum for the children. They enjoyed the children. And really, I think, enjoyed the people to a great extent.
How do you think the relationship was between the GIs and the Japanese women? Were they pretty free with them? Do you think we had very many Japanese-American babies resulting? Or do you think there were more marriages?
That's hard to say at this long date, at this far time.
Uh-huh.
legal baby, shall we say, as there may have been marriages, but I wouldn't swear to that. Anyway, by now, my 3 years there were about up. The government was cutting down the term in Japan to 2 years, so I was ready for home. And flew back to the West Coast and back to duty in the United States following a vacation. After that, I was stationed in Anniston, Alabama, which later was to become the headquarters of the WAC detachment. I was stationed in San Francisco at Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, and which post closed about a year before I was to retire. My final year was spent at Fort Monmouth in New Jersey, where we enjoyed going into New York for plays in the evenings. I had an apartment on the Atlantic Ocean and really quite enjoyed my final year. Standing on the reviewing stand at the time of my retirement, along with the deputy commander, I believe it was, anyway, one of the high officers of the post, was really quite exciting too, quite fun. Well, let's see.
How many years was that, Mary?
How many years in the Army? 18 years on active duty, but a very pleasant 18 years. Most of it was most enjoyable. I was glad I had stayed in after the war.
They gave you credit for actually for the beginning of your time that you were not originally considered military, right?
Oh, yes.
So you ended up with 20 years.
Yes, I had over 20 years service toward retirement.
Good. What have you done since you came home, primarily?
Well, I kept on with my work in dietetics here in Milwaukee, first at the Milwaukee County Hospital, then at, then I decided I was sick of working for a while. I wanted to 3 month leave of absence. Which I didn't get, but I went on a 3 month trip anyway. And this trip was really a trip around the world. We visited, we started from New York and flew by way of Frankfurt, Germany, Rome, to Karachi again, which had been my departing point from India in the years before. In Karachi, from Karachi we flew to Lahore, visited several points in Pakistan, went up over the Khyber Pass, and the Kabul Gorge to Afghanistan, flew back to Amritsar, India, where we were to catch a plane for Srinagar in Kashmir. Unfortunately, our pilot decided that the weather reports weren't good enough, and he wasn't going to fly over the pass. He was going back to Delhi. We had no reservations, of course, in Delhi. We had them waiting for us up in Kashmir. There was nothing in Jammu, the little town where we were let off, in the way of a place to stay for the night, even just 18 people. So our tour leader canvassed the town and hired the only taxis in the town, which was a total of five. And we took off up the pass into Srinagar. It turned out to be a beautiful moonlight night and quite a pleasant ride, although we didn't get up there till about 10 o'clock at night. We were taken to our houseboat, which was to be our home for the next week. And they had a dinner ready for us, waiting for us,
and
we enjoyed it.
This was on
Dal Lake, which is noted for its houseboats for tourists, and also some less elegant ones where some of the local people lived. Kashmir is a beautiful valley surrounded by snow-covered mountains, some of the higher mountains in the Himalayas. We spent a week there going up into the mountains, visiting rug factories, paper mache place, shop. We were greeted every morning by a boat bringing fresh flowers. And just had a very delightful time. From Kashmir, we went to Udaipur and Jaipur, and to Agra, to Benares, which is now known as I can't think of it. Begins with a D. Anyway, it's the sacred city on the Ganges River where everyone goes to pray and so on. From there we went on to Nepal, up to Darjeeling, and then home by way of Bangkok, Hong Kong, and the West Coast. On returning back to the States, I took another job for about 7 years and finally retired and started doing what I wanted to do instead of working.